So I'm going to be preaching from Genesis chapter 16 this morning. You are very welcome, obviously, to follow along in your Bibles if you want to, but it will be coming up on the screen as well. We're going to be looking at the story, an incredible story of a lady called Hagar. And she was a slave, she was an Egyptian slave of Abraham's wife, Sarah. And she suffered a huge injustice. And we are going to be looking at her life, seeing how God saw her, and how he went to her, and how he gave her an incredible future and a hope. And what we're going to be seeing as we go through this is a real practical outworking of God's faithfulness to her, even when people continually try to mess up his amazing plans to bless us. Now, before we get into the text, is this okay? Before we get into the text, we're just going to have a little recap about what's happened prior to this. Right, yes, last week Tony introduced us to Abraham, and he told us all about how God had met with Abraham and put this incredible covenant in place with him, that through Abraham all the nations on earth would be blessed, and that was going to be through Jesus Christ. He was going to have loads of descendants. And it was an incredible thing to be told, but Abraham doesn't actually have any children at the time that God tells him this. And he and his wife are getting on in years. So in chapter 15, which is the one just before what we're going to talk about today, God questions this. And he says, Abraham questions this with God. And he says to God, but you haven't given me any children. So instead, I'm going to make my servant my heir. And that's how this plan is going to come about. And God says to him, no, Abraham, that's not what we discussed. I am going to make someone who is your flesh and blood your heir, a son who is your own flesh and blood. And then the scriptures tell us that Abraham believed this of God and that God credited it. How do you say that? He credited it to him as righteousness. So we know that God has some amazing plans. He's going to give Abraham a son that is from his own flesh and blood. And we know that Abraham believed this. However, his wife is now 75 years old and still hasn't had any children. And in their culture at the time, it was actually really shameful for a woman not to have any children of her own. And her neighbours would have pitied her and scorned her, and a husband could even divorce his wife on this basis. And that is the place that we are at when we meet Abraham and Sarah in chapter 16, which we're going to be having a look through now. So I'm just going to read through the first half of the passage. Now, Sarah, Abraham's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. So she said to Abraham, the Lord has kept me from having children. Go, sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through her. And Abraham agreed to what Sarah said. So after Abraham had been living in Canaan for 10 years, Sarah, his wife, took her Egyptian slave Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar, and she conceived. And when she knew that she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. And then Sarah said to Abraham, you are responsible for the wrong that I am suffering. I put my slave in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me. And Abraham said to her, your slave is in your hands. Do whatever you think is best. Then Sarah mistreated Hagar, and she fled from her. So we're just going to pause here at this point in the chapter. And I think this is quite tough reading. It's quite a hard passage, isn't it? Because even though we know that Abraham has been specifically chosen by God for these incredible things, the actions of him and his wife in this story, well, they're pretty awful, aren't they? They're quite vile. And, you know, it was widespread custom in those days that a man could adopt a slave as his wife, and that the children who would be born to the slave then became the property of the mistress. And there are actually quite a lot of historical documents and even some contracts from around the time in the Middle East in this time, which shows that this was quite common practice. And so there are some scholars who will say, well, Abraham was just acting with the custom of his time. They were just being culturally okay. But the thing is, no matter what the cultural norm of that time might have been, this is not what God wanted. Right? Let's just be absolutely clear about what happened here, because Tired of being waiting for God's promises to come to fulfillment, Abraham and Sarah decided to take matters into their own hands. And they abused a woman who basically could have no say whatsoever in what happened to her body. And then after that, Abraham washed his hands entirely of the matter and gave his wife license to treat this woman however she wanted to. You see, it might have been culturally okay in their day for this to happen, but this was not okay by God's standards. And those are two very, very different things in the same way that they're very different things today. It wasn't part of his plans, and it led to some fairly catastrophic consequences. But do you know, I think although their actions were quite extreme, I think actually many of us can probably relate to how they were feeling at that time. I think if you've been a Christian for pretty much any period of time, you will probably already know that your plans and your timing and God's plans and God's timing do not always work perfectly together. They just don't, do they? And if you've ever been in that place of waiting for God's promise to come to fulfillment in your life, something that he's spoken over your life, you might know already just how tempting it can be to try to take matters into your own hands and kind of give him a little helping hand along the way with that. See, Abraham and Sarah, they didn't trust God's promise to them, and this lack of faith brought about all kinds of problems. So we're just going to carry on reading the text now. So after this, the angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was a spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, slave of Sarah, where have you come from? And where are you going?" "I'm running away from my mistress, Sarah," she answered. And then the angel of the Lord told her, "Go back to your mistress and submit to her." The angel added, "I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count." If you remember from last week hearing about Abraham, this is also a promise that God gave to Abraham that his descendants will be too numerous to count. The angel of the Lord also said to her, "You are now pregnant and you will give birth to a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him, and he will live in hostility toward all his brothers." And then Hagar gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. She said, "You are the God who sees me. I have now seen the one who sees me." So Hagar is being so mistreated by Sarah that she runs away into the wilderness. She's completely alone. She's pregnant. She's in the desert. What chance did she have? But it was in that place that we are told that the angel of the Lord found her. Now, this is actually the first time in scripture that this phrase, the angel of the Lord, is used. And it's quite likely that this is something which was called a theophany, which means it was like a physical manifestation of God himself, as opposed to an angel. And actually, if you look at Hagar's own statement, where she says, "You are the God who sees me," that sort of backs that up as well. So it's likely that this is God himself who's come to Hagar. And, you know, she was probably fairly scared. She was almost certainly quite lost. And the Lord met her right where she was. And he revealed to her that although she may have felt abandoned, she was so far from abandoned because God had a plan for her life. He knew her name. He knew the name of her baby that was not yet born. He knew the whole life that this baby was going to go on to live. See, God knew everything about her. And when she felt like everyone had abandoned her and had turned their face away from her, he found her, he sought her out, and he showed her just how precious and important she was to him, even though she was just some slave. So much so, in fact, that Hagar is actually the only matriarch in the entire Bible. Right? And what this means is that she is the only woman in the whole Bible that God declares that she will be the founder of a great nation. That is how important and precious she was to God. She was at the absolute bottom of society, and God gave her that incredible blessing. I mean, it's just absolutely outrageous. It's outrageous now, and in that time, it would have been utterly unthinkable. And it's in this moment that Hagar says, "You are the God who sees me." I wonder if you've ever felt invisible. Maybe you feel overlooked at work or invisible at home. Maybe you come to church and you feel like you're quite invisible. I would desperately hope that's not the case, but also not naive enough to think that that doesn't happen sometimes. But you are not invisible to God, right? He sees you and he loves you and he has a plan and a purpose for you because you matter to him. See, the wilderness, it can be a dangerous and a lonely place. But we also see in the scriptures time and again where it's a place of very, very deep encounter. It's a place where God repeatedly shows his amazing provision to people. It's where he met Moses in the desert and gave him this great commission. It's where manna from heaven came down to feed and look after the Israelites. It's where John the Baptist proclaimed that Jesus Christ was coming to save the whole world. And it's in the wilderness, in that place, that God meets Hagar. He encounters her, and she knows for the very first time that she is seen by the living God. But if you notice, this is an incredible moment where God turns up in her life, but he doesn't kind of wave any magical wand. He doesn't make her problems go away at all. There is no real miraculous thing here other than the fact that God himself comes, which is pretty amazing. But what they do have is an incredible conversation, and whilst they're doing this, he gives her such a hope for her future. But before this, he asks her two questions. He says to her, "Hagar, slave of Sarah, where have you come from and where are you going?" So before addressing the situation that she finds herself in, he asks her to look back and then he asks her to look forwards. Where have you come from? It's a good question to ask. How did you get here? I think we will all have times in our lives where we feel like we're in the wilderness. And it won't be all the time, praise God, but we will all have times when we feel like we're in the desert. It can be something caused by like a long-term struggle to find meaningful employment or maybe ongoing battles with mental health. And it's not always all or nothing either, right? We might have some parts of our lives which are absolutely flourishing whilst others maybe feel like they're wilting. Like, your career might be absolutely taking off, but back at home, your marriage seems like it's breaking apart. The wilderness can look really different for each of us. But if you feel like you are lost in that place, it is worth really stopping to ask this question. How did I get here? It's worth having a really honest appraisal with yourself, even though it might be quite uncomfortable. And I think sometimes it can be really easy to see that the situation that we're in is just as a direct result of some of our actions. And there's no judgment, right? We all mess up. It's just a fact of life. I mess up a lot, and I'm sure that most of you do too. But sometimes, like Hagar, the circumstances might be completely out of our control. It might be that a great injustice was done to you and really you had no part in it. But you do still have a choice in how you respond to that. Do you turn away from God and carry your hurt and shame like it owns you? Or do you cling to God and cling to the scriptures? The words of the Psalms, "I look to the hills. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord." Because only one of these two paths leads to life. But then God follows this up by asking Hagar, "Where are you going? Where are you going with this, Hagar? Yes, a great injustice was done to you. Yes, you're angry and you have every right to be angry, but what do you think is going to happen if you carry on going down this path?" Because I think the reality is there's probably only one way that Hagar's story was going to end had God not come in and intervened and asked her these questions. And that was going to be death for her and her child. Where are you going? See, without stopping to purposefully consider the path that you're on, it can be really easy to kind of just sleepwalk into repetitive negative cycles. You can get into blame situations, can't you, with people who you love loads. Well, you didn't clean up after dinner. Well, I work harder than you. And it can spiral really quickly. Where are you going with this? If I continue to blame others, if I continue to measure my happiness based on my relationship status or my parenthood status, if I continue to spend outside of my means, whatever it might be that's getting you into that real wilderness place, where is this heading? And so sometimes we need to stop and check in on that question that God asked Hagar. And I love what Hagar's response is. Does she say something just incredibly profound and holy, this woman who God has come down to? No, she's like, I'm running away. I am running away. I do not want to deal with that anymore. I've had enough. I'm leaving. And like, fair enough. Yeah, I think I would probably be exactly the same as well. But God knows that this particular plan of Hagar's, it's not going to lead to anything good for her life. And so he tells her to face the music. The passage tells us that then the angel of the Lord told her, go back to your mistress and submit to her. And when I read that, I'm like, oh, that must be tough. Can you imagine being told that? I'd be like, nope, no thanks. No, I'm good just here in the desert, thank you. See, Hagar, she was running away from her problem, and the Lord gave her this advice. Number one, return to face Sarah, the cause of her problems. And number two, submit to her. You see, Hagar, she needed to work on her attitude towards Sarah, no matter how justified it may have been. But running away from our problems just doesn't solve them. And God knew that for Hagar to be able to move forward from her place of desolation, that she needed to go back and address the problem head on. And so I think if you are in that place this morning, it's worth considering what steps you could take to go back. It might be that actually if your spending is spiraling out of control, that you could go to someone like Christians Against Poverty, CAP, and ask them to come alongside and help you and support you as you find your way out of that. Or it might be that if your relationship feels like it's breaking apart, maybe you need to just go back and humble yourself before the other person, regardless of what they've done, and apologize for your part in that and see how you can find a way forward. Or maybe if you're in like a cycle of grief that kind of feels like it's gone beyond the healthy now, maybe it's time to seek professional counseling and find a good Christian friend who you can trust to walk alongside you in that. See, sometimes God asks us to do things that can feel like they're really, really hard. And frankly, you'd rather not do them. But the hope that leaps off of this passage is that you are not alone. God is not asking you to do anything alone. He is with you. Because after the Lord tells Hagar about her son and he tells her to return to face Sarah and Abraham, the passage tells us she gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. God saw her pain and he went to her. How powerful and amazing is that? He is the God who sees you. The God who spoke the earth and the seas into existence. He sees you. You aren't invisible to God. He has seen every single tear that you have cried. In fact, in Psalm 56, the Bible tells us that God collects our tears in his bottle. So great is his love for you. Well, Toby, if you'd like to come on up, wherever you might be. I think the thing is, see, the wilderness, it will never be a fun place, right? But it can be a place where you can meet God in a very, very deep way. And it's so easy when things are going well to give lip service, isn't it? And to thank God for all that he's done and his incredible faithfulness. To get up in the morning and be like, yes, God, you are amazing. And God is amazing. But he is so steadfast. He is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. No matter what place you are in, God is so, so good, no matter what that season is. But actually, if I look back on my life, it's in those really tough times that I've encountered God in a very, very deep and meaningful way. It's been in times of absolute crisis. And what I love most about this story is that despite everybody's best efforts to mess up God's plan to bless us, he is still faithful. See, whilst all this is going on, God is still holding on to his covenant promises. Right? He is still continuing to bless Abraham. And in fact, he and his wife do go on to have a son, Isaac, who is one of the direct lines of descendants who Jesus Christ then comes from. And there were consequences for their actions, but there was also incredible grace and redemption for them. And we see the Lord's grace and mercy to Hagar as well. His incredible compassion. See, Hagar, she ran away, but God was still faithful to her. He saw this woman who was, frankly, forsaken by the world, and he blessed her very specifically and quite outrageously. Her son, Ishmael, he went on to father many, many nations himself. And Hagar got to be part of this incredible narrative that shows how Jesus Christ was going to come and bless everyone, even outside of this covenant relationship. If you have ever felt invisible or had done by, then I encourage you to look to this story of Hagar, because it is the most beautiful reminder that God sees you exactly where you are. And her story is filled with so much hope. And my prayer for you this morning is that you will always be able to, like Hagar, confidently say, "You are the God who sees me." Because God's heart is so full of compassion. He sees you, and he wants to meet you exactly where you are this morning.